The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, December 27th, 2012. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis from the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In my backyard, Lisa Brautz will ring in 2013 this half hour with a look back at 2012. And World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner will have the latest in agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Here are your last trades and settlements for this Thursday afternoon. Last trades in Kansas City, hard red winter wheat for March, 822 and a quarter, down 2 1/4. July, 838 and a half, down 3 1/4. Now settlements, March wheat in Chicago, 772 and a quarter, down 2 1/4. July, 790, down 1 1/2. March corn, 691 and a half, down 1 3/4. July, 692, down 2 1/4. September, at 617 and a half, down 2, and December 596, down 3 1/4. January soybean settlement here, 1418, down 5 3/4. Make that 1418 and 3/4, down 5 3/4. July 1401 and a half, down 2 1/2. November 1302 and a half, up 2 1/4. January soybean meal, 429.80, down 150. January soybean oil, 48.29, unchanged. December live cattle, 128.77 and a half, down 57 and a half. And those are your last trades and settlements.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says the next storm to impact the U.S. will come into the Delta Friday and the southeastern states on Saturday, but not much relief to dryness will come into the northern or west central U.S. plains or upper Midwest during the coming 2 weeks. Southeastern portions of the U.S. hard red winter wheat country will receive rain briefly on Monday. Argentina will see a more restricted rainfall pattern for the coming 5 to 7 days. The drying bias is badly needed with some exceptionally wet conditions in a few pockets across the east. Brazil's northeast will need significant rain soon to avoid a serious moisture shortage that could harm coffee, sugarcane, corn, soybean, and some cotton. The region will continue drier than usual for another 5 to 7 days. Favorable crop conditions are likely elsewhere across Brazil during the next 2 weeks.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt. Hello, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It was an interesting day in the soybean pit, Kurt. It was a day where the overnight started out promising, held gains for much of the early going in the open outcry, and then it began to sort of leak like a slow tire, and we finished in the January 5 3/4 lower.
Yeah, failure to see some additional export news sort of slowed the buy enthusiasm down. We'll see what tomorrow's export sales report shows. It's going to be on Friday due to the holiday this week, but they're looking for anywhere, you know, for 400,000 to 600,000 tons, metric tons there to be the equation. Just fears that the Mississippi River is going to continue to lose its water, and that exports through the Gulf is going to slow. We'll have to go up through the Pacific Northwest. A lot of fund liquidations. Funds sold about 2,000 contracts of beans. You know, not a whole lot of dynamic news to give them reason to be a buyer here. Kind of losing the bullish enthusiasm or positive enthusiasm for the moment here. Favorable weather, southern hemisphere. Unwinding spreads. Beans were higher in the early morning trade, everything else lower. And like you mentioned, as the time continued to tick away and through here, corn and wheat gained on the spread mm-hmm. side of the equation also, Dave.
So that is a whole bunch of fundamentals that meant that we traded in, about a 12 or 13 cent range as the day wore on. And we have Friday coming. And then we have January 1st just around the corner with fiscal cliff implications. What trader wants not to be home flat on Friday?
Well, yeah, seen a lot of lightening up of positions there. We'll see what the first year brings. There's ideas we'll have commodity fund rebalancing. There's some that preparing for the new year, new money coming in, new positions being taken. But it's kind of cautious attitude in through here. It kind of feels like we want to consolidate a little bit. You know, ideas were that the bear had Thanksgiving, the bull could have Christmas, and that did not happen. So we've taken the luster out of the market here and, like you say, waiting for some direction, whether it's South American weather or some leadership out of Washington to take charge.
How come we went counter-seasonal this time? I mean, usually we are rallying into the end of the year.
Well, the big news item is basically the physical cliff. If you go back and look at speculator money coming into the marketplace, speculators have been loaded up on the long side. It seems that a lot of liquidation out of the marketplace. We just ran out of bullish news. Demand destruction in the corn side of the equation. Just a little bit of a cancellation in bean sales to Asia, and a little better weather forecast in the southern hemisphere. It's just a combination of things. Also, too, this feels like the trade's been wore out. It's been that dynamic roller coaster move this year. You know, beans started out the year around $11, looking for lower markets there. Drought hit in South America, sent beans up to $15. Then we saw bigger acres, normal weather forecast. Beans went back down to $13. Then before the drought set in, we ran straight up like a rocket to $18. Then the physical cliff and a decent start to South America has put beans back down to $14. When you add all that up, that's a huge swing in market, and I think people are kind of glad to take a little downtime here as we prepare to trade a very volatile 2013.
If the crop is made and it proves to be the numbers that USDA suggests, what is the downside risk for soybeans?
Well, it probably will be a type of market where we could see if everything would click on the bearish side, we could probably be seeing the front contract approaching the $12.50 level. And the new crop November beans, slipping down to this $11 area.
So very much still a lot of risk in this market to the downside from 1302.5.
Yeah, we're looking at, the momentum's, a little bit, a little overdone here. We could have some bounces, but the overall trend is down until we can see some crossover, the moving averages, or some bullish news come into the marketplace or regain investor confidence. It's going to be awful hard to go sharply higher.
So now I'm in a little bit of a quandary. If I am a hedger, knowing that the market is going to deteriorate, knowing that there were already better prices to be had, and maybe I did a little, but maybe I haven't done any. Now I have to either try to start here for a little bit, or I have to be really, really patient, it seems like.
Well, probably a little bit of all of the above. When you pencil in these current price levels, for most producers we visit with, it's still very profitable. So it's not like, doom and gloom. So it's kind of a situation where we feel the downside needs to be protected. Most producers are going to wait till February to see what type of insurance is available, protection-wise, and go that route due to the fact that it does help in their mindset to protect price and protect bushels. But in the meantime in here, we've done a little bit of protecting the downside on paper here until we get to that time window, make sure we just don't erode lower here and hopefully not put, the low end here this spring, early summer, and get everybody bearish, and all of a sudden you'll see another weather phenomenon take place to see the market, move to the upside during the last half of the growing season.
Has anybody complained about a lack of a farm bill on the commodity title to you yet?
Well, it's been a concern, but, it's the same old story. I don't know why the American public put up with this. The farm bill is a little bit more complicated than what is led to believe. There's a lot of moving features to the farm bill. The news media has done their job of promoting something that needs to be done. When you watch the nightly news, they're talking $7 for a gallon of milk, Dave.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. We thank him for joining us on this Thursday. Usually he is our Monday afternoon analyst.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas has announced a reorganization of subcommittees for the next Congress. Lucas has added nutrition to the subcommittee on department operations and oversight and removed credit from that subcommittee. Lucas has also created a horticulture research, biotechnology, and foreign agriculture subcommittee, and he has created a livestock, rural development, and credit subcommittee. USDA's Economic Research Service says food price inflation for 2012 is now expected to be 2.25% to 2.75%. In their monthly update, ERS lowered its outlook for food price inflation in 2012 compared to the 2.5% to 3.5% level they have carried on for several months. For 2013, however, ERS still is looking for food prices to be up 3% to 4% from their 2012 level. Retail food prices, despite the severe drought in the Midwest, have been flat in 2012. Looking ahead to 2013, inflation is expected to remain strong for most animal-based food products due to higher feed prices. EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson is stepping down after a nearly four-year tenure. Jackson, 50 years old, a chemical engineer by training, did not point to any particular reason for her departure, but Jackson constantly found herself caught between administration pledges to solve controversial environmental problems and steady resistance from Republicans and industrial groups who complained that the agency's rules destroyed jobs and made it harder for American companies to compete internationally. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Braltz looks back at the 2012 In My Backyard Smorgasbord of Stories.
When I started In My Backyard 2.5 years ago, I knew there was a lot of ground, fertile ground, shall we say, to cover in central Illinois. It's been an experiment that's still going strong. This is the 61st episode. 2012 was a very good year. Local food continues to captivate the interest of eaters in central Illinois. And in case you missed what happened, we're going to recap. In February, In My Backyard visited a couple of Urbana farms, Blue Moon Farm and the University of Illinois Sustainable Student Farm, to find out how their seed ordering was going, since January and February are prime time for seed starting, whether you're a farmer or a gardener. It was actually reassuring to discover that even the larger farms got a little behind once in a while. Also in February, I participated in a mustard swap and came home with 10 different kinds. I suffered a particularly tragic loss of audio that night, so trust me when I tell you, it was a swingin' party. In March, I visited Art Martin Urbana and got a lesson in making mozzarella cheese by hand from owner Brian McKay. In March, I also went to a farm in Sydney to watch a pro show some novices how it's done, how shearing sheep is done. The sheep were not impressed, but I certainly was. In April, I talked to Woody Tash, the leader of an organization called Slow Money, about how our financial support of local food enterprise, support beyond buying the products, is an investment that can yield far more than financial and agricultural return. April also prompted me to ask a few friends and neighbors about the rumors I'd heard regarding morel mushrooms appearing in their yards. There was truth to the rumors, but I learned A, that weather can get in the way, and B, timing is everything if the mushrooms actually do appear. May got me thinking about the connection between weather and insects and how that connection affects our growing season here in Illinois. So I talked to University of Illinois professor Rick Weinzierl about it. In an answer to one of my questions, he was not too concerned about a plague of locusts in the near future. I also discovered in May that a fat wallet is not necessarily necessary to have interesting-looking and useful garden apparatus. I traveled to Springfield, Champaign, and Urbana in June to sample three distinct versions of a very central Illinois dish, the meaty, potatoey, and cheese-infused horseshoe sandwich. That month, I also took cookbook author Millicent Soris to a farm in Sydney to buy fresh eggs, and then back to my house for a lesson in properly poaching eggs. The results were delicious. By July, the University of Illinois Sustainable Student Farm was literally peddling their produce to the market they held every Thursday on the quad, beautifully showcasing a partnership between the farm and the University of Illinois School of Agriculture. In August, In My Backyard partnered with Common Ground Food Co-op to bring some very inquisitive young people into several backyards to check out gardens, make friends with chickens, and harvest some seeds. I also hung out with writer Janine McLaughlin at Urbana's Market at the Square and talked about her book Farmers Markets of the Heartland while she signed some copies for appreciative market goers. September took me to Arthur, Illinois to visit the Great Pumpkin Patch, where they do it all, as they say, from dirt to dessert. Needless to say, it's not just about the pumpkins down there in Arthur. In October, I chatted with Chef Paul Vurant. He owns V Restaurant in Western Springs, Illinois, about preserving food and using those preserves by the seasons, which was the focus of his book, The Preservation Kitchen. He was signing books for a dinner that evening, and if you listen closely, you can hear him slapping the book cover shut as he works his way through the box. That month also found me visiting two guys who have deep knowledge of hot peppers, growing them and their culinary uses. I think of Spencer and Jay whenever I slice open a lemony-scented Fatale pepper. In November, I revisited backyard chickens in Urbana and found out more about Philip, the rooster that had been living in my neighborhood. I also learned that possums and raccoons aren't chickens' only predators in our part of town. I also pondered the concept of the food truck in November, and so visited the young fellows at the Cracked Truck, where they serve innovative, portable food, cheekily named, to hungry students on campus by day and feed the post-bar crowd by night. Just this month, I talked with Mark and Leslie of the Champaign-Urbana Smorbrod Project about Danish open-faced sandwiches and why it's important for people who cook to give back to their communities. And Justine Bersoni and I talked about why people take photos of their food and share them online, while we took photos of our food and shared them online. As I said at the top of the piece, 2012 was a very good year. If you'd like to hear any of the episodes from this year, you can stream them anytime at www.will.illinois.edu/agriculture/inmybackyard. In the meantime, I'll be hibernating until the middle of February. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Michael Yellman of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dave.
So what do you do when it's really, really quiet? Because I imagine it is really, really quiet.
Well, we've actually kept pretty busy here in Champaign. Guys are getting settled away for the year end and figuring out what they need to have priced as far as grains go.
And what kind of business are you doing that way?
Guys have been selling. You know, we've seen a lot of pressure on the markets here over the last couple days, or I guess week or so, and I think that's triggered some selling. We're still at the $7 cash level, and you know, 14.5 for beans. So,
and do you expect those levels to hold into springtime?
I think that old crop, there isn't a way we could go too much lower in the markets. As far as new crop, though, I think it's going to be interesting to see how we do trade, because we could have a pretty big planted acres number for this next year's crop, and a lot of it's going to depend on how our spring weather and conditions look.
Well, potentially, I mean, you saw the Informa numbers. They came out, I believe, last week.
Correct.
99 million
correct.
Acres
I think
of
that's
corn.
What trade's a bit scared of.
And so with that kind of number sitting out there already, and we're not really doing a whole lot on the export front, you begin to wonder what kind of thing could potentially be a bullish impact on the marketplace between now and the beginning of planting season. Or is it going to be one of those types of years when it's just like a slow leak, sideways to drifting lower, drifting sideways, drifting lower, sideways, drifting lower, and on the future side, and what would basis do to prop that up or not prop that up?
Yeah, it feels like going into spring here, we could be a sideways lower kind of trade like you just described. You know, talking about the acres, though, if we go back and look at if we just figure an average of like an 89 million harvested acres for next year at a 142 yield, which, you know, is an average yield, we're still looking at a 1.8 billion bushel carryout, which, you know, that puts corn probably in the low $5 range. So I think there's a lot of downside risk if we get a good crop. And as you mentioned, what bullish factor is going to drive it up? And I guess that would probably be another weather market this year, which I'm pretty sure that nobody wants to see again. So
why don't we go ahead and talk about your prices for today then?
Today on the Chicago Board of Trade, nearby corn was down 1.75, and we are paying $7.04 here in Champaign. New corn was down 3.25 at $5.96 on the board. Our cash price for next fall is at $5.76. Beans were down at 5.75 on the Jan 13 board. We are paying $14.29 going home today. And fall 13 beans were actually up 2.25, and we're paying $12.77.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Michael Yellman of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. It's National Fruitcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1741, Jean Bourne was born, the inventor of the sugar granulating process. He also was founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1822, Louis Pasteur was born, a French scientist. He showed that microorganisms were responsible for disease, food spoilage, and fermentation. He developed the process for killing those organisms by heat, called pasteurization. He also developed vaccines for anthrax and rabies. In 1867, William Cecil Dampier was born, a British scientist, agriculturalist, and science historian. He developed a method of extracting lactose from surplus whey, a process that was used on a commercial scale during the cheese shortage in Britain during World War I. He also conducted experiments for more efficient means of production on farmland. In 1931, Dampier was knighted for his public service in agriculture. In 1923, Michael Owens died, an American glass manufacturer. He invented the automatic glass bottling making machine that revolutionized the industry. And in 1968, Victor Shelford died, an American zoologist and ecologist. He was one of the first to treat ecology as a separate science. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. He is in Kansas City, Missouri. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I suppose we could nitpick if we really wanted to, you know, just pick a little bit at this part of Brazil, nit and pick a little bit at this part of Argentina. But boy, overall, it still remains pretty doggone good growing conditions down there, doesn't it?
You know, you're absolutely right. I wish more people would look at it that way. You know, the market does try to dissect stuff, looking for reasons for run up or run down. And in this particular case, you're absolutely right on. There is really nothing to be worried about in the nation of Brazil. I think that we've got enough rain in the pipeline for the next 2 weeks to let the ground stay fairly moist. And even if it stopped raining at the end of the two-week period, we would be able to coast probably for another couple of weeks on the moisture that we will have by that point in time. So I really can't get too excited about a problem in Brazil. If anything, it's just going to be the impact of an abundant crop coming out of that country. Argentina, you know, there's been a lot of talk about a lot of the wet conditions, and really they've had 5 months in a row of unusually wet conditions in portions of the country. So it is not a perfect scenario coming out of that country, and that there are going to be a little bit of cuts here and there on yield. Certainly winter wheat is taking it on the chin right now more than anything. It is harvest time, and it's just been raining too often. Now, the next week, the next 5 to 7 days, I think we'll probably see relatively drier weather there in Argentina. So some improvement will occur. But just like here in the States, when it's wet and you get into the summer season, you start pulling that moisture out of the ground and destabilizing the atmosphere and putting more humidity in the air, all you're going to do is create more rain. So Argentina is probably not going to stay dry for very long.
But it's really not the number one growing area that is having the major problem, right? It's like their number three growing area.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is not the it's not the primary crop region, though. You're right.
Let's turn our attention then to the U.S., where Argentina sent some rain to western parts of the Corn Belt, would you?
That's a very good point. Yeah, we do need the rain out there. And you know what? I don't think there's going to be much precipitation for a while. We are still paralleling the 1934 drought in the middle of the country. We are doing a really good job keeping it moist in the eastern Midwest, and we're starting to knock out the drought in the southeastern corner of the country. But it is still bone dry out there underneath a little bit of layer of snow from western portions of Kansas northward into parts of Montana, actually southern Canada, and certainly the Dakotas and parts of Minnesota and Iowa. So those areas are not likely to break from the pattern we're in right now for a few weeks yet. And so we will come into spring with a very dry subsoil and something that we will be very concerned about as we move into the warmer days.
Thank you.
Have a good afternoon.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.